Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. Vicky Gonzalez is on assignment today. The pulse oximeter. It somewhat sounds like something from the movie Back to the Future, does it not? But it's a very common medical device. It's that clip the nurse or doctor puts on your finger to measure the level of oxygen in your blood. Simple, painless, yet an important measure of what's going on inside. However, there is concern about the pulse oximeter's effectiveness during evaluating patients of COVID-19, especially for Black patients. And now we are learning about how bias in the device could have led to hours-long delays in patients with darker skin tone getting the care they needed. Important, considering that according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, although Black individuals represent 13% of the U.S. population, they account for 20% of COVID-19 cases and 23% of COVID-19-related deaths. So this study of the pulse oximeter's effectiveness was led by researchers at Sutter's Institute for Advanced Health Equity and conducted in collaboration with the Roots Community Health Center in Oakland and UC San Francisco. Joining us today are Kristen M.J. Azar, Scientific Medical Director with Sutter, and Dr. Noha Abolada, CEO of Roots Community Health Center. And a big thank you to both of you for helping our audience understand this research and then its significance.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So for context, and I'm not sure which one of you would be best to do this, but if you could explain how the pulse oximeter measures oxygen content in a person's blood so we can have a sense of how this works.
Sure. Do you want to go ahead, Dr. Blada?
Well, it uses infrared light that goes through the skin. And so if there is anything there competing, which melanin, as it turns out, does, then it will sort of interfere with the ability to get an accurate reading.
So, Dr. Abolada, I assume this is important when it comes to COVID because of how the virus affects the lungs. And how does the device determine the line of care then that a patient would get?
Well, the pulse ox reading was actually the objective criteria that was used to decide whether someone would even get taken to the hospital by an ambulance. It was the advice we were giving people at home to decide when they should bring themselves to the emergency room. And then in the emergency room, it was used to determine whether a person should receive oxygen, treatment, or even be admitted to the hospital. So it was actually the one sort of objective reading that was used to determine all of the care that then followed.
And we say objective, but now it looks like it wasn't so objective.
Exactly. It's flawed. And so although it may appear to be, you know, an objective thing that a doctor could look at, we now know that it is compromised and it may be responsible for folks who got sent home to die or people who died at home or who were not, you know, were not treated in a timely manner.
So your study and analysis in a nutshell found that this device overestimated the amount of oxygen in the blood of Black patients, signaling, of course, that they may not be in as bad of shape as non-Black patients. And so it all comes down to the melanin blocking the device's ability to read the oxygen levels?
That's right. So it's actually kind of a gradient. And so this could be really any non-white skin, and the darker the skin tone, the less accurate the device.
New versions of Apple Watch and Fitbits, as well as other wearables, also track blood oxygen levels. Do we know if they show similar faulty results when it comes to skin tone? I assume they use the exact same technology.
I think this is a big question about really thinking about how we conduct research and clinical research and thinking about the importance of diversity in our patients that we enroll in clinical trials and clinical studies to really understand, as we develop these devices, how they may differentially work in different populations.
Right. Director Azar, let's dig into the findings of the study a little bit. How does your analysis show this could have affected the care for darker skinned patients?
Well, I think the main point here is that given that the pulse oximeter value essentially means something different for Black patients compared to those with lighter skin, it was harder for clinicians to appropriately treat Black patients suffering from COVID-19. And that resulted in measurable treatment delays, and it contributed to the structural racism in healthcare, regardless of clinician intent. So the central role that the pulse ox played in clinical decision-making made it really challenging for patients to really get the care that they needed, specifically Black patients, given the darker skin and the systematic overestimation of oxygen.
Mm-hmm. I see a statistic here that I believe was provided by the study showing that the increased time to supplemental oxygen treatment was, I imagine this is an average of 4.5 hours, which is really critical with how that virus, especially in the early versions of it, were just decimating people's bodies.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to note that the pulse oximeter is used in more conditions beyond COVID-19. It's sometimes used as a way to reimburse for supplemental oxygen in the home. We were having patients within the context of COVID-19 have the pulse ox at home to think about when was appropriate to come to the hospital. So it became a really important tool that many were relying on in thinking about coming in. And it also resulted in many patients actually being sent home when they otherwise may have been admitted if their pulse ox had been 1 or 2% higher based on the device. And so that may have contributed as well to delays in treatment and worsening of conditions when they finally did get treated or come or presented later on to the hospital.
Director Azar, are you surprised at all by the findings?
The sad reality is that this issue is actually not new. There's been documented evidence of a higher level of inaccuracy of pulse oximeters for dark-skinned individuals for literally decades. I think what brought this issue back to the forefront in recent times is the central role that it played in the recommendations and treatment guidelines for COVID. And we and many others early on detected the disparities that were emerging within the pandemic around outcomes. And so I'm actually not surprised to find that this is one piece maybe of a bigger puzzle of how systemic and structural racism may play into the differential outcomes that we were seeing and we still see in terms of the pandemic.
Dr. Abolata, COVID, of course, is still around, as are several other conditions that would affect someone's blood oxygen level. What can Black patients take away from this study and, you know, this information? Is there a way that they can then use that to say, hey, well, that reading, you know, the reading might have come back like that, but it's not an accurate reading?
There's a couple of things that we've been recommending to patients, and I just want to caveat it all by saying it's completely inadequate. We need this to be fixed. But in the meantime, what we are recommending is that patients actually establish their own baseline when they're feeling well, because we're at least hopeful that changes in the pulse oximeter value will still be instructive and still say, you know, if you're normally 99 and now you're 95, that may read as normal or not meet the criteria for admission, but it is very significant in that it's a 4-point drop. And then we're actually, believe it or not, telling people to take the study with them to the emergency department to make sure that their physicians are aware, because this, you know, this is something that is unfortunately not well known. And I'll remind us all that there was a point in the pandemic where our hospitals didn't have enough beds. And so decisions with limited resources were being made in response to this device. And so we're really asking people to get informed and advocate for themselves. But I think the sad fact is that this is just one example of how structural, you know, problems lead to disparities. And we have an issue where the death disparity, I mean, here in Alameda County, African-Americans are dying at more than double the rate of everyone else. And that gap is actually widening when we, you know, also look at things, you know, that put people at higher risk of contracting COVID-19. So this is not an issue that's behind us, unfortunately, and it really needs to be addressed.
Are any of the makers of this device suggesting ways that it could be improved so that this isn't a problem?
Well, we know that it's possible, and we know that it's, you know, probably, you know, going to take a little bit more resources to make a device that basically can work on all skin tones. And so you mentioned, you know, some of the Apple Watch devices and things like that, that use software and other things. And so I think we have not heard, I have not heard anything that, you know, suggests that this is going to be fixed by the manufacturers, but it's 2022. We have adequate technology and this has to be fixed because the only alternative now is a quite painful procedure of taking blood from the inside of the wrist out of an artery and waiting, again, losing more precious time in order to get a confirmation. And it's just simply unacceptable in 2022 to say, well, if you have darker skin, you're going to have to do a painful procedure in order for me to get accuracy.
Mm-hmm. Director Azar.
I was just going to add to that. I do believe the FDA is meeting around this issue in November, which is very encouraging. And I think our study adds to mounting evidence and mounting, making a compelling case to really evaluate this at the policy level, specifically around the pulse oximeter and how we can do better with our standards and really thinking about holding our entire system more accountable for knowing that this is a real phenomenon. I mean, we confirmed it with our own data in terms of the systematic overestimation, and that's different for darker skin patients. And so I'm encouraged that that some change will hopefully take place in the future as we and others continue to report on this and really appreciate your help in really getting the word out.
We're happy to do it. And I'm thinking that there are many people listening right now who are affected by this and maybe not necessarily on along the COVID lines. And so you had mentioned, Director Azar, that there are other illnesses where this might be an issue. Could you go down a few of those so that people listening might, you know, have a light bulb and bring this to the attention of their doctor the next time they go in?
Absolutely. So any respiratory condition that may require supplemental oxygen in their home, so emphysema, COPD, congestive heart failure, any condition where you are relying on oxygen or would benefit from supplemental oxygen, really have that conversation, especially if you're concerned that the pulse oximeter readings are inaccurate, because it may be really crucial in thinking about reimbursement and being able to have those resources that you need to have high quality of life and to be able to manage your condition.
Yeah, I want to remind everyone, you're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about a new study revealing that the device used to measure how much oxygen is in your blood could have caused delays in care and treatment, specifically for darker skinned people, Black patients, while being evaluated for COVID-19. Dr. Abolata, you are quoted as saying, in regards to this study, it's time we all demand technology that doesn't discriminate. Can you unpack that for us?
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, this is a contemporary perfect example of systemic racism in healthcare. And so for folks who aren't sure that that exists, I think this is a good example to show that, like Director Azar said, this has actually been known, was discovered decades ago and was never addressed. That is completely unacceptable and has now led to an untold number of deaths and disability. And so I think it's really important that we don't just try to, you know, make a corrective calculation or something like that, but we actually go back to the drawing board and say, this was a mistake. These are devices that should never have been approved. They made it through the approval process without having to go through their diligence of ensuring that it worked on everyone. And in this country, with all of the other biases, whether they are explicit or implicit, and all of the other reasons why we have, especially African-American patients, not able to trust the healthcare system, this is a great example of why that has happened. And so I think it's really incumbent upon us to make sure that all of the policies, procedures, devices, and this is really a device that is assessing a vital sign. So for us to have a vital sign that we cannot rely upon and that is steering healthcare professionals in the wrong direction is completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if a basic thermometer didn't work, you know, based on your skin tone. I would hope that that would be addressed immediately. So I'm thinking that this starts at the drawing board phase, right? At the very, very beginning, when the technology industry and the medical industry are coming up with new devices to help, these aspects should be considered then, correct?
Absolutely. I think we're going to have to take a really good look at the device industry and see and the device approval process and ensure that just like we saw with clinical trials for the vaccine, where we all wanted to see good representation of different racial and ethnic groups in the trials, we need to do the same exact thing for devices. So it should not be acceptable to actually have a device cleared without demonstrating that it has adequate representation in the clinical trials.
And Director Azar, we should mention you're with Sutter Health again, founded in Sacramento, now one of the largest healthcare providers in Northern California. In your work with the Institute for Advancing Health Equity, you have also uncovered other inequities in medicine. What are you working on now?
Yeah, no, thanks for that. I mean, we are definitely on a journey within Sutter Health. We have been doing work to understand and address disparities and to achieve health equity for years, and recently established our institute in December 2020. We're focused now really on understanding ways that we can create a dialogue around moving us all forward around unconscious bias mitigation healthcare settings. We're partnering with the California Medical Association, the California Primary Care Association, and the Physicians for Healthy California to co-host a symposium on October 14th. It'll be a virtual symposium open to all, and bringing in some wonderful speakers, policymakers, clinicians, community leaders, and scientists to really talk about the state of the science around unconscious bias mitigation in healthcare. So we're hoping to really be at the forefront of really thinking about how we can do better, you know, together as a community, as a society in these issues.
And are you feeling that shift on any level?
I do. I think there's a momentum growing. I think it's encouraging to see that, you know, we're just one team in a kind of a movement of other teams that are working to look at these things and bring them to the forefront. And we're partnering. I think that's really where the future is thinking about partnering, because together we're stronger. And so I feel like the pandemic really did allow for a renewed interest in understanding why these disparities have persisted for decades and how we can move from just continuing to report on the same disparities that we see and being reactive to now being proactive and trying to do something about it and really close those gaps. So we at Sutter are on that journey as well and hope to be part of that solution.
Well, thank you both for getting this data out there so that people understand that there is this flaw and it's not isolated. You just heard Kristen M.J. Azar. She's the scientific medical director with Sutter Health's Institute for Advancing Health Equity. Thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for having us.
And also Dr. Noha Abolada is CEO of Roots Community Health Center in Oakland, correct?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you again, both of you. Okay, so up next, we'll take you on a tour of, now, you don't have to hold your nose for this, it's Sacramento's regional sewage facility, where a massive upgrade is set to go online in the coming months, helping the environment and adding some relief for farmers during this drought. We'll also learn a bit about how the sewage they treat can provide early warnings for new COVID variants and potential surges, as well as other diseases, too. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Randall White.